Okay, back with part two of Dialogue Conspiracy, which deals with politics and conspiracies and news of today and yesterday and, you know, predictions of what might be tomorrow. And May, why don't you pick up where we left off, talking about the latest Friday developments in the Watergate affair.
Well, there were two gentlemen who have been named, G. Gordon Liddy and Howard Hunt, have been named in conjunction with the five men that were arrested at the Watergate Hotel. And the importance of this team cannot be stressed too much. Howard Hunt was 21 years with the CIA. He planned the Bay of Pigs invasion. He works with the emergency contingency units. He's a man who had walkie-talkies in his White House desk connected with the Watergate Hotel at the time of the arrest. He had a gun in his desk at the White House. Howard Hunt, it seems now, was at the Watergate Hotel. The news services, UPI, said that he was at the Watergate Hotel at the time the five were arrested. And G. Gordon Liddy is the counsel, that's the attorney, for the committee to reelect Richard Nixon. Now, you have to get the framework of who these men are. G. Gordon Liddy, as a lawyer, worked inside the White House, and that has to be a very important position, one of the highest jobs in the United States, the lawyer to the President of the United States. And a few months ago, before the men were arrested at the Watergate Hotel, John Mitchell, head of the Justice Department, resigned from the Justice Department to be chairman of the committee to reelect Richard Nixon. And G. Gordon Liddy, the attorney in the White House for Richard Nixon, left the White House to be the attorney for the committee to reelect Richard Nixon. This team has to keep that man in office four more years, so I can't just say over again how important these men were to Richard Nixon.
And well, didn't Liddy show up at the police station before anybody had called for
him? No, that was Caddy.
That was Caddy.
He's a CIA lawyer, too. Caddy showed up before a call had been placed. But G. Gordon Liddy was the
He was actually in there.
Yeah. But his importance in background is that Liddy was the lawyer who conceived of the idea of having a date, which was April the 7th, that a cutoff date, the people have to say, who donated money to Richard Nixon's campaign. You see, ever since Nixon ran for office, he's been accused of having secret money, slush funds, vested interests that he represented.
And yeah, all this, was in another campaign, he was accused of having a slush fund.
All of his life, in Mises crisis, that was his second crisis, the slush fund. So finally, a few people in this country are getting sick and tired of Richard Nixon's secret money. Who puts him into power? So they said, okay, when the next election comes around, you have to tell who's funding you, Richard Nixon. So G. Gordon Liddy was the lawyer who got the idea, after April the 7th, we'll tell you everybody who gives money to Richard Nixon. April the 7th was the cutoff date. That was his idea. Well, up to April the 7th, Douglas Caddy, the other attorney that worked with this group, who went to represent the five men arrested, worked in an office in Washington, Mullen Associates, Robert Mullen's office, and this office was the one that collected $10 million of secret funds that Nixon doesn't have to say who gave him the money. And this is where the nitty-gritty comes to, is that, not to digress too much, but Louis Tackwood claimed in Los Angeles, that the agent provocateur for the L.A. Police Department, that $10 million had been set aside to overthrow the government, to create martial law, and then to kill Nixon. And this group of men that were arrested are all... The five were involved with the Bay of Pigs and suspected or linked with the Kennedy administration and the mishap that took place there. And here they are all at work with money and teams and espionage tricks in the election of 1972. So Liddy was the brain man for the cutoff date of the $10 million, which is getting a lot of play in the news these days. And he was the lawyer behind all that. So the news this week said that Liddy, the White House lawyer who left the White House to work for the committee to reelect the president, was at the Watergate at the time that the men were arrested. Now, there were two articles in the paper, and I won't have time before the show to clarify them. One came over the Associated Press that said that two White House aides, Liddy and Hunt, were in another Watergate room on June 17th with electronic receiving devices when the police rounded up the five men.
Martha Mitchell lived in the Watergate Hotel.
Martha and John Mitchell lived in the Watergate Hotel.
In another room, not in the Democratic headquarters.
4 days after the arrest of these men, four men registered. The hotel also got away. There were nine men registered there. But these two top men, Howard Hunt, 21 years with the CIA, who planned the whole Bay of Pigs invasion, and G. Gordon Liddy, were at the Watergate Hotel at the time that the men broke in. Now, you have the top team of the United States in espionage work. Howard Hunt, who was at the Watergate, who escaped arrest, incidentally, was recommended, according to the news media, to the White House by Richard Helms and William Buckley. Buckley has been anti-Nixon. He's been for Ashbrook. The whole anti-Nixon, Young American for Freedom, radical right-wing group that were connected with the more higher echelon of anti-Nixon for going to China, going to Russia, kicking Taiwan out of the UN. There's a group that are very much against Nixon. They think of him like a traitor, like General Walker surfaced this week in the news again. He hasn't been there since John Kennedy was killed. That was the day he turned his flag right side up. It had been upside down until then. Turned it right side up, and he doesn't recognize Nixon or McGovern as being any different. They're not qualified to be presidents of the United States. Well, he thinks of Nixon like he thinks of Kennedy. And this particular group of Hunt was recommended by Buckley and Richard Helms. In the Watergate, I have to reiterate that every week we're doing something on the news on the Watergate, and you'll see a lot of it breaking because it's so terribly important to the succession of power in the United States.
Now, one article says that Hunt and Liddy were in the Watergate, and there's a discrepancy there, isn't
there? There's a discrepancy in the news because one article, the San Jose Mercury, which comes from the Mercury reporter, Al Eisel, said that the men were across the street at a motor lodge across from the Watergate Hotel. The UPI wire service that you got said they were at the hotel themselves, but they escaped arrest, these two men. Now, in the article I did for The Realist, I have a section on how do you tell a CIA operation from a ordinary bugging, or they call it a caper, you know. And one of the reasons I know it was a CIA was what I referred to as deniability. Each one doesn't know anything about what the other one is doing. And then later, under oath, it turns out that they do. And these men were also there. Now, it's interesting. The White House gave an emphatic statement, which I have a while back, that Howard Hunt was not at the Watergate Hotel that night. You know, they said, we know he's not involved because he wasn't at the Watergate. Now, today, under oath, it seems that he was at the Watergate. John Mitchell has told the committee, or a lawyer, I suppose, is this under oath, that he had no advance knowledge?
Yeah, John Mitchell made that statement Friday, and I believe it was part of depositions being taken by the Democratic Party's attorneys.
Yeah, but you
so
see
that... It's under oath.
It's under oath, and it's in quotes, he had no advance knowledge, but...
That's like the president saying that no one working for him now was involved in the Watergate Hotel.
He had no advance knowledge of the alleged bugging. But I'm sure that within 1 minute afterwards, history will prove and time is going to prove that the Mitchell apartment was used for something that John Mitchell knew about this just a few minutes later. Because down in Key Biscayne, the president was acting very nonchalant about the whole thing. And in the news this week, it said that they had a meeting of Charles Colson and the top aide the night that the men were arrested. And they said, let's tell the truth, let's tell everything and let the chips fall. It's going to be embarrassing. But a particular man in the White House wouldn't let them go ahead and tell everything, and he disobeyed the orders of Charles Colson, and that was Mr. Liddy. And now it's turning out that these men were involved. They couldn't tell the truth. Liddy was with the FBI. Another thing is that a whole group of these men, like Howard Hunt and G. Gordon Liddy and James McCord, were all so related to the FBI. They were agents of the FBI at one time before they worked for the CIA. They were all FBI people. So when, you know, a lot of people say, and I bring this up very often, they make fun of the idea of conspiracy to kill John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King. Like, how could it be so big? Jim Garrison, New Orleans, said it involved the FBI, the CIA, the anti-Castro Cubans, and a long list of people. Well, it did. They're interrelated. There's certain people that are members of both agencies.
No, Howard Hunt has been tied to the White House then.
Oh, yes. He had a desk at the White House at the time of the assassination.
Howard Hunt is also still missing, isn't he?
No, he showed up this week.
Oh, he did.
He surfaced. He's a real chicken. See, two of the five.
He was missing since the Watergate affair until.
Yeah, well, two of the five men arrested had his number to call in case they were in trouble, and he took a powder.
Where did he surface?
Of course, how could they call him if he was at the hotel with them? You see, they used his number when they were out of town, evidently. Where did he surface?
Yeah.
He surfaced this week and did a deposition. Judge Ritchie, public official taking care of this case, announced that first he had a closed hearing. And he said everything would be locked up secret and nobody could read it. And then he was accused of the secrecy ruling of being hiding something. So he came out with an interesting statement this week. He said, this is quotes, "I think there is a suggestion implicit in all this that if something is not done by this court to bring the matter to a head one way or the other, the integrity of the courts may become subject to question. The integrity of the entire governmental process may become subject to question. This judge is not going to be party to any such criticism. It might serve the public interest by having a civil trial before the election." Now, I want to jump to a point. We talked about $10 million of secret funds that Nixon had, you know, set off by the April 7th date. But because some of the money that came in after the April 7th was in the bank of Bernard Barker, who financed the Watergate escapade, or whatever you want to call it, the General Accounting Office has gone into these funds, and that's been in the news all week. All of you who listen to the show know the articles on the General Accounting Office. But I brought in just three articles to show you how important it is to know where the $10 million came from that Nixon has, even though the law said he didn't have to declare it, because one of the men who gave $25,000 on April the 10th to the Nixon committee, the committee to reelect Richard Nixon, one of those men got a bank charter just a few days after he gave the $25,000. He comes from Minneapolis, and he's a very wealthy man. And he applied. His name is Mr. Andreas, and he's a millionaire, and he applied for a bank charter in a Minneapolis suburb. And the important thing is this: the banking is controlled by the rich, the very rich, and they scratch each other's back. If he gives $25,000 to Nixon, he's also a big supporter of Humphrey, he got a bank charter. Now, the Washington official said that it was a quicker than usual. It came through in 89 days after the request, which is very fast if you know anything about wanting a savings and loan bank or a bank charter. The timing came 89 days after the time he submitted it. He gave $25,000 to the committee to reelect Richard Nixon, and his co-partner in the bank. There were five men on the board of directors of the bank, and the co-partner of the bank is Kenneth Dahlberg, who's finance chairman for Nixon's committee. So he not only raised the $25,000.
Finance chairman for that state or?
For the Midwest, for the whole Midwest. Kenneth Dahlberg, who's the finance chairman for the committee to reelect Richard Nixon, is also a partner in the bank. So he gets.
Question marks go flying through the air.
Yes. And that was only in one newspaper, incidentally. It didn't make a lot of the news that Dahlberg was one of the men who would gain by the bank charter, and he squeezed $25,000 out. Now, another man who was interested in this bank charter that called up on the Ridgedale bank charter, his name was Peter Dominick. He's a senator from Colorado, and he expressed an interest in this Minneapolis bank case. And when they were asked why a senator from Colorado was interested in the banking case, they said he's a friend of Clark McGregor, who became the new head of the committee to reelect Richard Nixon. So this is, now the way this money went, Dahlberg's name came in the news because Andreas gave him $25,000. And this is the article I did for The Realist on the Watergate goes into the money game and CIA financing or funding or espionage money used for hanky-panky that isn't specifically what they say for the re-election of the president. Because Andreas gave a check to Dahlberg. If he wanted to give it, if there's no strings attached, he could write a check, $25,000, to Kenneth Dahlberg. Both men live in Minneapolis. He could give them the money. That would be it. Dahlberg would deposit in Washington. End of the story. But it didn't work that way. Andreas has a home down in Florida, and Dahlberg is visiting down in Florida. So it seems by breaking down the chain of command that Andreas was playing golf, and he gave on the golf course to Kenneth Dahlberg $25,000 in cash. And most men who are financiers and millionaires simply don't carry around dollars and nickels or $100 bills in cash. He handed him $25,000 in cash on the golf course. And Dahlberg takes the cash and gets a cashier's check in Boca Raton, Florida. Then goes up to Washington, where he sees G. Gordon Liddy, of the finance chairman of the committee to reelect Richard Nixon. And at a hotel in Washington, D.C., he hands him this cashier's check. See, oh, he gives it to Maurice Stans, former Secretary of Commerce. Maurice Stans, at a hotel room. Not at the office. He's brought this money, and he doesn't mail a check in a deposit. He gives it to him at a hotel, at a meeting in a hotel in Washington. Stans gives it to G. Gordon Liddy, who then, when he was questioned by the FBI, quit the office as the attorney for the committee. And then he gave it to Mr. Sloan, who left the campaign committee because he said his wife was pregnant. He said it had nothing to do with the financing. He left because his wife was pregnant. So he gave the money to Mr. Sloan, and supposedly it was to go into the committee to reelect Richard Nixon in Washington. And it was endorsed there. And 10 days later, it shows up in the bank account of Bernard Barker in Florida, in Miami, Florida, in his bank account. It was cashed two times, supposedly. And no one will say how the money was used. It was $114,000 in the bank account in Florida that one of the men arrested among the group had. So the money went from Minneapolis to Florida to golf course to Washington, then back to Florida, back into the bank account of Barker. Now, this is why, this is only $25,000. Can you imagine what fun you'd have with Richard Nixon's $10 million that this group was using? Then there was another example of how the money was used. A suit is going on. The GOP is being sued for raising the price of milk. This is the Nader suit. And he claimed that the dairymen had a meeting with the administration, and the administration had said, we will not raise the price of milk. And this was in 1971. The Agricultural Department said, no, the price of milk will stay the way it was. This was on March 12, 1971. The price of milk would not be raised. On March the 25th, that's 13 days later, the price of milk was raised. They said, yes, it'll go up. In those interim of 13 days, the dairymen contributed more than $300,000 to Richard Nixon's campaign. They went to the White House, and they had
more than just a little bit suspicious.
$300,000. That's like the ITT $4,000. See, the price of milk goes up for you and me. But in the interim of 13 days, they went to the White House.
Does look a little suspicious, but what can you do about it?
Well, there's a suit on. The dairymen have a copy of a letter, and Ralph Nader has it. A lawsuit, because in their writing, they said, a letter, they said, dated March 23rd, they said, it helps to sit at the White House across the table from the president and then get the price of milk raised. And they said, they apologized. They said, here's a copy of a letter from the president of Mid-America Dairymen. It said, the facts are of life, or the economic welfare of dairymen, depends on political action. And we have friends, and we have to pay for it. We have friends in government. And the sincere, soft voice of the dairy farmer isn't going to match the hard currency in campaign funds of politicians by the vegetable, fat interest, labor, oil, steel, or airlines.
Isn't it against the law for corporations to give money to campaigns?
Well, this is what they did. They made, remember last week we read off the names of these dummy front organizations, about 10 mm-hmm. of them? Well, the dairymen broke themselves into another group of campaign groups, and they have large titles like TAPE and ADEPT and SPACE. And ADEPT means Mid-America Fundraising Committee. TAPE means the American Milk Producers. SPACE means the political arm of the dairymen. Then they have a kickoff for 72 dinner. These are the funds. They have the Republican National Committee, the Republican National Finance Committee, the Operations Committee, the Finance Operations Committee. They have a whole list of...
Victory Committee, I see there.
There's a whole list of names, and they break them down to $5,000 each for nine committees under TAPE, and nine checks for nine campaign committees under ADEPT. And this is what G. Gordon Liddy conceived of, that they would break down. This is $300,000 into $5,000 checks, and the price of milk went up. And in a letter, see, there's a suit going on, because in the letter they said, if you give them the jingle of hard currency, and you sit across from the president, if you put money into his campaign, your price of milk goes up. Now, if you want a raise in salary, I mean, how, you talk about getting raises, the milk people want raises, you want money, go to the president. Everybody should go to the president. If people out there aren't satisfied with their salary, just put Jingle into the campaign, and he'll go behind you, and you'll get what you want. This man wrote a letter, which is in the Ralph Nader suit, about that. Well, we're talking about secret funding of the Republican committee, the subject of the $89,000 that ended up in Bernard Barker's bank account, was broken down this week, too. And that came from Houston, Texas. Would you believe that? That is the city that I also mentioned. Let me see in the Realist article about checking out Houston, Texas for money. For one reason, James McCord, one of the men arrested, had very strong contacts in the Houston, Texas area, and his sister works for an oil company in Houston, Texas. And I asked, what oil company does she work for? Because this would be a direct line. She's on the board of directors of McCord Associates that was hired for the security of the Republican convention. Well, the $89,000 came from Houston, Texas. Now, I don't make a connection to McCord's sister yet. These are things that people in Washington have to look up for me, just like they have to look up which men were at the Watergate Hotel or if they used Mitchell's apartment. But Robert Allen, who's chairman of the Texas Finance Committee for Richard Nixon, along with Emmett Moore, the treasurer, are co-partners for Gulf Resources and Chemical Company in Houston, Texas. Robert Allen is the president, and Emmett is the treasurer of that. And they are also the lawyer for Manuel Arguero de Guerre. He is from Gulf Resources and Chemical, and for the last 10 years, Robert Allen has worked with de Guerre in Mexico. And the money that ended up in the Watergate Hotel robbery, some of the money that was in the pocket of the men, the $5,600, that was traced to what they called sacked in. It was sacked in with $500,000 from Houston, Texas. It was separated and split and went down to Mexico in several hundred thousand, and $89,000 of it ended up from, it went from Houston to Mexico to Miami, and it was paying for these men at the Watergate Hotel. Now, they had to be doing more than just receiving information. There was another news article today in the paper that they were photographing documents of Larry O'Brien's
that may have been in a previous Watergate type
and
affair.
But I know that they were doing more than getting copying of speeches, because you had this terribly important team of men. James McCord, who was head of the CIA compound for 19 years, guarding security there, arrested at the Watergate Hotel. So what you have is a team of very important high officials from Richard Nixon's top men right on down, except for saying that Richard Nixon could be at the Watergate. You have his most important people. You have the lawyer for his committee who is behind the funds of his reelection, and that is the thing that puts him in. I read this week that Maurice Stann has $45 million for Richard Nixon's campaign. McGovern can't compete with that. They're going to send pictures all over the country and people giving speeches and literature on the wonderful administration. It's just pure propaganda. It's exactly like Goebbels and Germany in the Ministry of Propaganda. It's unlimited money. And if people don't cough it up, how do you separate it? One of the big problems in the news this week was, how do you separate money from their private accounts, from CIA money? I mean, how do you know whether people are sending this in, or if they don't have the $45 million, that the CIA wouldn't put it in these accounts? See, the General Accounting Office...
Don't ask me. Well,
the General Accounting Office is asking the question, how do you separate private funds, you know, from money donated? It seems, you know, that they've gone into the... Then, of course, the Maurice Stantz got mad and said, now we have to investigate McGovern and go into his money. And one of the charges made was that people who gave $10 or more are supposed to list their occupation at rallies in different places. People didn't send in what they do as an occupation. That also could be investigated as intimidation. You know, with Nixon's administration, looking up a person's name and occupation, there could be a lot of repercussions of people getting jobs. Blacklisting, like they did at the time for television or radio or newspaper work. You know, you could use this and screen people out Did you see the article this week on the surveillance since 1940? It was in the paper. 25 million people, there's dossiers on 25 million people.
Yes, I did. I did see that.
A computer thing. Well, see, one of the conditions was that of the election, they list your occupation. Well, Richard Nixon doesn't divulge his 10 million to start with. He has secrets, but the Democrats can't, you see.
Huh?
Up until April the 10th, they didn't give to McGovern because they didn't know he'd be the president. See? So after that date, they have to list their occupation if they're for McGovern. And I wouldn't send in money just blanket before April the 7th on what I think the Democrats should do. I would want to know who was going to run. And then after that date, we have to list what we do, but none of the Nixon people, 10 million of it sitting there.
Anybody contact? Anybody you can write? Anything people can do? We present them with almost an hour of questions and maybe problems with government, but don't leave them any action that they can take. Is there anything?
Well, you know, so many weeks we gave suggestions of action to take. If people are so inclined, one of the things they could do is to become knowledgeable on a lot of the facts is get a hold of the realist. Oh, there's some more at the station. We left them off last week, and I'll bring some more back.
There are a couple more left, yeah.
Get a hold of a copy that goes into detail about the background of Watergate. Ask Julian Comancho, as you see him on the peninsula, running for Congress, or any other people running for state assembly, or the McGovern people. Keep hounding them on what position is he going to take. Read your article and get informed first. The first problem is that people have to spend some time to get informed before they can take action. And outside of just listening and becoming knowledgeable, say in a drawing room conversation kind of thing, most people don't want to spend the time it takes to really become knowledgeable, to put some pressure on the people. There are not enough of them forcing an action.
Well, we'll be back next Saturday at 4 o'clock again to hopefully make people knowledgeable, at least raise some questions and seek answers. And listening to Dialogue Conspiracy, and I think I'll repeat that.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy, a public affairs presentation of KLRB News. If you have questions that you want answered on future programs, or any comments, write Dialogue Conspiracy, KLRB, Box 3904, Carmel, California, 93921. I'm Phil Kogan. Thank you.